clear it down.
Blog Talk Radio.
Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show, and I'm very, very happy to have this special guest, U.S. International, of course, a Hall of Famer, and currently with Fox Soccer as our analyst during the England Premiership season. It is, of course, Mr. Eric Winalda, manager of California FC. Thank you for your time. I appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem. It's I just got out to New York, got to enjoy some of the Euros today, which was a pretty cool start, so I'm enjoying the trip.
Oh, I'm glad you are. I'm glad you're in my city. Anyway, just to discuss this, how amazing was this to have this group going from round one all the way through round four and basically tearing down every single opponent that was in your way?
Headed away. The United States now.
Well, I mean, if you look at what LFC was able to do, I think it's even a little bit more than that. We had to go through a qualification process. It started off as a scouting, identification of talent and project is now no longer exists, but it's still mutated into Calisti, which is an actual club, and that's pretty cool. I think that the group that we put together and what we asked from them, we couldn't have ever thought that they would be able to accomplish what they were able to do. I mean, if you think about it, in 30 days, after being thrown together in 14, but in those 30 days, they played 9 games.
And we get
all
going
of them,
here,
all but one on turn.
Clearance of the ball. Here comes Trinidad.
We traveled, 12 days of that 30 days. We're spent in airplanes. I think 17 flights. We never had a home game. All the games were on turf, and they still figured out a way to hold the opponents close to almost 280 minutes. So I couldn't be more proud of them. They just ran out of gas. They got to Seattle. Playing against a very talented MLS side, and everyone just caught up with them in a couple of minutes. It was sad to see them bow out the way they did, but
see what happens.
Just to be fair to it, I just feel like they did as much as they could, and when the final whistle blew, I couldn't have been more proud of them. It was a lot to endure. They've been through a lot in a very short span of time. They've learned a lot, but they got to prove that they're pretty good soccer players and good people along the way, and hopefully they all have bright futures.
I hope so, too, because they proved not just to you, obviously, but they've proven to everyone that loves this tournament, every U.S. soccer fan. They were basically, minute by minute, looking at if it wasn't streamed video, it was streamed on audio. If it wasn't streamed at all, obviously there were spotters there for your games, and every single person was on their toes, on their computers, at the website called thecup.us in the chat room, marking, reading, just unbelievable how Cinderella wears football boots.
What's going to happen here?
And it's your guys, one of the two stories of this, of the Open Cup tournament this year, along with the Michigan Bucks of the PDL, and just to see them perform and doing well, it just blew everybody's mind off.
The link. Bye-bye.
Well, I mean, I think, we appreciate that. I think our guys, they really felt like this was an opportunity for them to come together and play.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, the post-game show. The United States drawing with the Trinidad and Tobago, the Soca Warriors, by a final. It's nil-nil. Unbelievable moments, folks. Unbelievable scenes that happened. You got to say, this was a game plan to perfection for the United States as Jurgen Klinsmann finally, he gets 4 points in November. Maybe some vindication. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see what the final verdict is. But what you got to say right now, folks, is this. Jurgen Klinsmann right now has 4 points in his pocket. Jurgen Klinsmann right now has done a great job of getting a result that was needed very, very desperately by his team. They showed a strong work ethic. And you gotta say, they found a way to get it done. They found a way to get things done here. And boy, oh boy, that's a huge point. That's a big, big point right now. A huge point right now for the United States as they get. It's a scoreless draw. But still, it's a big scoreless draw because why? Because right now you have Trinidad and Tobago. You have Trinidad and Tobago and the United States even on 4 points. But the United States will be in the top end of Group C until they take on Guatemala in the home-and-home series coming up in March of 2016. Waiting for Kartik Krishnaiyer to call in to talk about this matchup. And we'll keep an eye out on Canada, El Salvador, as we go ahead and continue to talk about some of this great, great action here. Unbelievable stuff here, folks. Unbelievable stuff. It's just unbelievable things to see and to hear. And apologize for the Eric Winalda interview. Just we couldn't come on live right off the bat. Had to wait for this matchup to be over. And hopefully everybody's enjoying it. Hopefully everybody is having some fun with it. And you know what? It's just been absolutely fantastic. It's just been absolutely fantastic to see what's been going on. And all I can say is it's 4 points. 4 points in games. That's what you want. That's what you want to see. And right now, Jurgen Klinsmann is in the driver's seat in Group C. So waiting on for Kartik Krishnaiyer to join us. And if anyone wants to call in into the show, go ahead. The phone number is 646-929-1823. If you've been watching this match and you want some, you want to comment on it, please do so. Call in 646-929-1823 and go ahead and just let's go on. You know, go ahead and give me what you think so far in two games. All match long, I really thought the United States played very solid in this one. The truth of the matter is, they probably should have won this one 1-0. They probably should have won this one by a goal to nil. Unfortunately, Zardes nails the post. The crossbar. Unfortunately, a good save by Jan Michael Williams. But sadly, a penalty should have been called, and it wasn't. Should have at least had a penalty at called in this matchup. But unfortunately, I mean, it would have been cruel. But still, though, that's a penalty. That's considered a penalty in my eyes. And I really, really thought that for the U.S., at least a penalty attempt should have been given. But it was not. And unfortunately for the U.S., no penalty was given. But you know what, though? A very vital point was earned here by the United States. They've done a great job so far of getting what they needed. And, just got to say, you just have to say right now, Jurgen Klinsmann currently doing a good job so far in these two games. You have to be honest with everyone. You got to be make sure that, you know, this is World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF. Nothing is a give. Nothing is a gimme. Nothing is a gimme. And for the U.S., they get 4 points. They're still on the plus five on the differential. Trinidad at the moment with the plus one on the differential. And at the moment, you just have to say that for the U.S., they're just finding ways right now on the road to get that victory. They're finding ways on the road to get that victory, and they found at least a point out of it going forward. You know, love to see what the stats are in this matchup, of course. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. But at the moment, you just got to say right now for the USA that that was a big point. Trinidad and Tobago looked solid out there. Trinidad and Tobago were definitely a better side. And you just got to say right now, at this moment, that both teams might make the hex. We'll have to wait and see against what's going to happen with Guatemala, obviously. And as we go ahead and head on over to some scores here, officially, 77th minute, Haiti 0, Jamaica 1. Donaldson with the goal for Jamaica in the 62nd minute. So that's pretty good there from Jamaica's end of things. Canada and El Salvador down in San Salvador already underway. And right now, we're going to see what the Canucks can do. Joining me now from World Soccer Talk, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, you said that this Jurgen Klinsmann needed a solid performance on the road in Port of Spain. Did he get a solid performance?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not happy with the performance and the way we play, but I mean, I guess it's just the reality of where we are. I mean, given the context of how the United States has played the last year, how the United States has played since the giveaway by Michael Bradley in Portugal, so the last year and a half. I mean, I guess a result in Port of Spain against a pretty good Trinidad team, a team that just won in Guatemala, a team that won the Gold Cup group with Mexico in it, a team I think is going to push to qualify for 2018. I guess it's a very good result. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe we just take stock of where we are, and this was this result was not a bad result given where the United States is at this moment in time. That having been said, where we are at this moment in time is not acceptable.
No, I definitely agree with you that in this moment of time it's not acceptable. But I will say this though, Kartik. I will say that if you want to finish off the year with a high note or some form of a high note, this is it. This is it. I mean, 4 points in two games, and let's be honest, if Zardes doesn't hit the post, he doesn't hit the crossbar, if the long-distance shot by Jermaine Jones is not stopped by Jan Michael Williams, and let's also not forget, that was a handball in the Trinidadian area. That should have been a handball.
Yeah, that was a couple. Yeah, that was a handball, but I think that's a tough call. You know, I would have felt bad for Trinidad if they had called that. It's one of those where it's a cross, and he's trying to mark the defender, mark the attacking player. Trinidad also, I think, had some opportunities where they didn't take advantage of their opportunities. There was one where it was centered, and they should have put a shot on target, and they didn't. Tim Howard had very good command of his area tonight, which I thought was important because when you're going up against a team like Trinidad that can break quickly, that has a player like Kenwyn Jones, who's one of the top players in this part of the world, this region, in the area. And Klinsmann hasn't said who's number one and number two, right? He's alternating keepers.
Yep.
But I wonder if he really was rotating based on the fact that Guzan got the last competitive match against Mexico, it would have been Howard against St. Vincent and Guzan tonight. I think the fact that Howard started tonight, kept a clean sheet against a good opponent, the only good opponent the United States is going to play between now and the Copa America in a competitive match, and I think Howard might be slightly ahead for that number one spot. And one other quick observation, I think I was pleased with the build-up play in portions of the second half, but we don't have a whole lot of guys we can throw into the mix that are better than the guys that played tonight. So I know everyone was talking about Clint Dempsey, but I do level he's been at. We saw that with Seattle at times this year. We saw that with the national team. So I think this was kind of our best attacking team we had and score a goal. At the same time,
I think we just lost Carter Kirschner. Maybe he's still there. We'll see what happens. But, you know, that's the one thing I agree with Kardik. Yeah, we just lost Kardik. We'll get him back on again. But I do agree with Kardik. I do agree with him. You know, let's be honest. We are missing Clint Dempsey. We are missing Clint Dempsey. And, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe this will be a wake up call for him, because he's been in and out, and not so much the lineup, but you know, mentally he's just been in and out. So it's one of those things where you gotta say, Clint Dempsey right now, he really, really needs to shape up and get back in there. That's what he needs to do. And we just lost Carter Kirschner again. Hopefully he'll call back in. Let's see if we can get him back in there and continue on with this discussion. But I'll tell you right now, myself personally, I like to be honest here, of course. I'm pleased with the point, because the way that Kardik did say, the Trinidad side is much
recording.
Improved.
You may hang up.
He's probably going to try and call back in. So we'll let him call back in. Here we go. And maybe we have Kardik on now. There we go. So go ahead, Kardik. Go ahead and say it. You're saying about Dempsey again. You know, he's been in and out with his play. What else was it about Dempsey you were saying?
Yeah, I was saying that this was a pretty good sign that this U.S. team in the second half kept the ball really well. We're able to move the ball nicely around. This was the best attacking team we have, the guys that played tonight, minus Dempsey. And I think maybe these are the guys that are still better than Dempsey. So that was encouraging. Now, in the first half, I thought Trinidad were better than we were. I thought they were, especially for the first 20 minutes, much better than we were. But, look, I hate to keep coming back to this. I know a lot of people like the look of Michael Bradley playing very, very deep. And tonight he was playing a little bit deeper, but he wasn't necessarily playing in that number six role that people like to see him in. Although it was an interesting formation, obviously a selection that Klinsmann threw out there. And Jones was kind of holding behind him. I still think Bradley plays better when Dempsey's not in the team. And that's just been my observation from the last year. That wasn't my observation in 2007 or 2009 or 2011, but now it's my observation as Michael Bradley develops different facets to his game later on in his career.
Yeah, you know what, Kardik? That's the thing. I really agree with you there. Clint Dempsey, I mean, I've written that article a long time ago when it was MLS talk. You know, I had problems with Dempsey. I think he wants to do whatever he wants to do. He doesn't follow the game plan. He's supposed to be a big-time goal scorer for the U.S. national team. And just sometimes I just think, you know, he finds a way to put himself in a position where it's just, you know, he's just not concentrating hard enough. And once again, I just like to think that you're right. I think Clint Dempsey might be forced out. But then here's the big question then, Kardik.
He's a disciplined player. That's my point, is that he's not tactically disciplined. Michael Bradley is very positionally oriented. His positioning sense is very good. That comes from his dad. Pin it all on him being coach's son, but that has a lot to do with it. And Dempsey's the opposite, so I just don't think they play well together.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely correct, and you're seeing that, unfortunately. And that's an unfortunate thing. And that's the one thing I think that when it comes to these types of matches or the setups, Kardik, you know, when are we going to get a balanced starting 11? I mean, that's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked seeing Jeff Cameron inside today. I thought that was a nice look. Timmy Ream wore down a little bit, but I like him in the seam. I think Michael Orozco was very good today. I wouldn't say very good, but I think he was good. He was solid. And that wasn't an option, I think, that Jurgen Klinsmann wanted to exercise playing Orozco outside of right back. But it worked. He got away with it. And I think Orozco was fine. Orozco's he's a very serviceable player. So I don't know if that will be your back four going forward, but it might be. Beasler has still got some – I have a lot of question marks over Beasler after watching him in Kansas City this season and some of his play with the U.S. team. We'll see. So then let's look at the rest of this team, because you're asking if we might stick with this 11. Fabian Johnson will always be in this 11. I think DeAndre Yedlin is a player that Jurgen Klinsmann loves. We found that out when he called him into the national team at the age of 19. He is now getting games. We talked about this the other night. We were on some show you and I were on. I can't remember if it was the other night or when it was, that since Big Sam took over at Sunderland, Yedlin has played every minute of every Premier League match. So
yep.
He's a guy that's now playing regularly in England in a top league, and I think he'll continue to be in this team. Jones is not going to be around for the next World Cup, but he's still a gamer. He's still such a good player, and qualifying, he's got a lot left to give. And we saw that tonight. We saw that in the game the other night, just too, against St. Louis. Bradley, of course, will always be in the team, and Altidore will be. So Zardes is the question mark. And it's really kind of Zardes or Dempsey, right? And,
yep.
Giannis Zardes didn't finish that chance, but I like the run teammate today. I like his movement off the ball. I think the timing of his runs is pretty good. I think he finds space. These are all things Dempsey tends not to do in games where he disappears. So, this might be your 11. This might be your ideal 11. Again, I mean, the Orozco and Reeves selections being the two that you could put question marks over, but both those guys are center backs, and they did okay outside today. Orozco may be a little better than Reeves.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I'll say this for Tim Ream, though. He's normally a center back. I'm assuming for Fulham they put him as a left back, or Jurgen Klinsmann said, we need you as a left back. And I thought he had a decent match tonight.
He's playing center back for Fulham when I watched them a couple weeks ago in the championship.
Okay. But I was going to say was this, is that, you know, Tim Ream doesn't get his head pile-drived into the ground. And that little head knocking he did with Jermaine Jones, unfortunately, doesn't wear him down. I think he would have played the full 90, but you know what, though? You're right. I think he's been very serviceable so far as a left back, and I think it's something new for him. But he's, you know, he scored a goal before, you know, with the Red Bulls before he went to play in England for Bolton. So I'm happy to see Tim Ream getting a new position for the national team, and so far he's done a decent job, I think. And lost him again. Don't worry, we'll have Kardik back on. Here he comes.
I was saying, Kardik, Tim Ream has done a decent job as a left back.
Right. I think it's a difficult position for him to play, particularly in a place like Trinidad, where they've got a lot of pace, Cordell Cato pushing out on their right side, our left side, and a lot of movement, and it's humid down there. It's hot and humid down there. And
yep.
the week of training in Miami helped to get the United States ready for this. But I think it's a very, very interesting situation now for Jurgen Klinsmann, because he's I think, lost faith in the guys that normally play the fullback positions. You know, we talked about him not calling Eric Lehigh in the past. At left back, there's been a succession of players. Brad Evans is a guy he kept calling in at right back, who was not good in Major League Soccer this year, and he finally didn't call him in this time. But he's been calling him in regularly. He brought DeMarcus Beasley out of international retirement to play left back again. So I think this is the solution. Now that you've gotten through your toughest game in this stage of qualifying, you might be able to to look for someone else to play those fullback positions, left back and right back, or you might be able to get through this with Ream and Orozco, because I think a big part of this equation is the health of Timothy Chandler and his mental state, and then the other other big point is is it more effective to put Fabian Johnson in the midfield? And I think it is. I think that what we've seen from Fabian Johnson in these last two matches, with him going forward from his natural position, with him at Borussia Mönchengladbach, since he's gotten fit again this season, what we saw from him last season is he fired Mönchengladbach into the top four in Germany and into the UEFA Champions League, improbably, is that he is a dynamic player when he's deployed in an attacking position. And that's the same deal with DeAndre Yedlin. So both those guys can play right back. Both those guys have played right back for the United States. But they're both more effective players, Yedlin and Johnson, when you play them at midfield, at right and left midfield. And they're both able to provide significant cover to whoever the right and left backs are. What we saw against St. Vincent the other night was that when Jesse Zardes was playing on the right side of midfield, I think there was a bit of an issue in front of Yedlin, because Yedlin would bomb forward and Zardes wouldn't cover. And it was St. Vincent, and obviously they got away with it, although they didn't get away with it the first 10 or 15 minutes of that game. So Klinsmann wanted to give that look, wanted to see how that would go. Obviously, he must have made the same observation I have. And so you push Yedlin back to that right midfield position. You want to keep Zardes in the team, so you move him to a striker position, you drop Bobby Wood to the bench, and then you start Fabian again on the left, and it works. So this might be the look going forward from the United States. The one question, though, is when Alejandro Bedoya is fit, where do you squeeze to this team? He's obviously one of your best players, right? I think that goes without saying. But where is the play in this team, and do you have to change the formation to accommodate him? Do you have to go back to kind of a pure 4-4-2 diamond? Do you go to – because I think what we saw today was more of kind of a pure 4-4-2 or 4-1-3-2, where you had Jermaine Jones holding but moving pretty well off of Michael Bradley, who was playing central midfield, and the two wide players. Once you bring Bedoya back in, you're in a position where you're going to – he's not a pure winger, right?
Yeah.
And you might have to drop one of these guys back to the fullback position. So that's a question mark for Klinsmann, because Bedoya, unlike Dempsey, who I think might be dropped permanently now, Bedoya will be back in the team when he's fit. So that's the only one, right? But the rest of the team you saw tonight, I think, is kind of the U.S. team you're going to go with for a while.
Yeah, you know what, though, Kardik? It's a shame to say that because, you know, Clint Dempsey, we have to say, you know, he is a great talent, but at times he just doesn't look like he's interested. He just doesn't look like he wants to play. It looks like he just wants to, like, hot dog it or just walk around. I mean, I don't want to be mean about it because I know that Clint's a good player, but, you know, I always look at the mentality. It's not just the, you know, the quality of a player, but the mentality of the player that has to go out there and prove that. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get a bunch of analysis that, like, I mean, Landon Donovan, who I spent some time with the other day, as you know, Landon Donovan might come out tomorrow and say, well, if Clint were in this team, we would have won. So there might be that analysis from people who want Klinsmann gone. I kind of want Klinsmann gone too, but I'm not gonna dog him on the Dempsey on selection, because I thought today's artist is playing in what would have been Dempsey's position, I thought was very good, honestly. I mean, he didn't score that goal, okay? And I know people are going to say, if Deuce gets his head to that, Eric Winala, I think, said it, and Thomas Rong, and a couple people on Twitter. But I'm not sure Deuce gets it on goal. I'm not sure he makes that run, honestly. I don't know if he's in the same position as Zardes is in there. And I thought Zardes played very well. I thought his movement was good. He ran into nice pockets of space. His runs, his understanding with what Josie was doing and Josie's movement, very, very good. So, and Josie's going to be, Josie and Michael Bradley are going to be the centerpieces of this team, right? So if Sardis is developing a good understanding with the two of them, I don't see any reason to look, Jurgen Klinsmann, as long as he's the coach, maybe there'll be some other, if he gets fired, someone else will come in and have a different opinion of this. But Jurgen Klinsmann's not going to drop Michael Bradley. Doesn't matter how much people complain and say Bradley had a bad game. I see that all the time on Twitter. I hear that from people on shows. When I write articles, people make comments. Oh, well, Bradley's terrible. He's regressed. He got back to MLS. But it's obvious Klinsmann's not going to drop Bradley because he likes Bradley. He likes his game. And it's, the other thing that's obvious is Klinsmann has built his team, whether you agree with it or not, tactically around Bradley. It's kind of that central player. So, and I know some people don't agree with it. They feel like Bradley's playing in too advanced a position and feel like Bradley's better as a holding player and would like to see Clint get more of the ball. But Klinsmann made the decision that Michael Bradley's his playmaker. He's his central midfielder. And Clint Dempsey, and that's why I guess Dempsey and Donovan have been run off, basically. It's because Bradley's that central player. So if Michael Bradley's understanding with a player like Giannis Zardes, and now Darlington Nagbe, we're bloodletting into the national team after his fine run with Akron and with the Portland Timbers, and has gotten citizenship now. If those guys' understanding is better with Michael Bradley, and they're better complementary players to Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore, they will be in this national team above Clint Dempsey. I have to state that it is not about who your best 11 players are. It is about who works best as a unit. And you can agree with it or disagree with it. Maybe we can argue this after I finish my point here, Daniel. Jurgen Klinsmann made the decision about 3 years ago that Michael Bradley was his best player and he was building the team around him. Right? I mean, I think we all know that. So he has built the system. Whether you agree with the system or not, he's built it around Michael Bradley being that focal player. And I again repeat that Clint Dempsey Michael Bradley does not play as well when Clint Dempsey's in the team. I can point to any number of matches where that was the case. And I also think that opinion has now, which started with you and me, Daniel, you and I had this same conversation on a show about a year and a half ago before the World Cup in 2014, about 2 years ago, actually. It is an opinion now that has led to other journalists. Steve Davis wrote a great article about this, saying, yeah, you know, when Deuce is in the team, Michael doesn't seem to play as well. He's not as comfortable. And Jurgen has hitched his wagon to Bradley, so I guess that's it for Deuce, that kind of thing. And it's very sad that your second all-time leading scorer kind of goes out this way, but I don't think he has much of a future with the U.S. team. Now, if Michael Bradley were to get injured, you're going to want to call him back in, obviously.
Obviously, yes. Obviously. But once again, you know, it's about wanting to be a part of a team. That's all it is. I mean, does Clint want to be a part of this team? And right now he's making the decision easy for Jurgen Klinsmann, and that is no. He's not going to be on this team because, you know, you want to keep your captain happy and you want to make sure he's comfortable out there. That's all it is.
Right.
That's all it really is,
yeah.
Kardec. So, I mean, you know, what are we going to do here? You know, it's either we you got to appease one person or some people, and that person is Bradley, and, you know, Michael.
The decision to take the armband away from Dempsey and give it to Bradley was controversial for some people, but I didn't think Dempsey should have been the captain to begin with. I think Jurgen made the decision. Remember, you and I felt like Beasley or Howard should have been the captain 2 years ago when Dempsey was named the captain, and we thought it was very strange. I look back on things now, and I realize maybe he got Dempsey to be the captain because gave him the captaincy because he wanted him to buy into what he was felt like. This was the best way to get him to play hard and be a leader. And when he failed the test, although you could argue maybe he didn't fail the test, but when the World Cup was over, Klinsmann decided to move on and made Michael Bradley the captain and didn't make much of a big deal about it and just. Kind of what happened, right? And
well,
that was where you can go times.
Well, it's a combination of a couple of things, actually, Kardec. It's not so much. I think he gave him the captain's armband to let him grow up a little bit more. And unfortunately, Dempsey, you know, that was a despicable display he did against the Portland Timbers in the Open Cup match over in Starfire. And, you know, ripping up a referee's book. I mean, you know, it's nothing violent or anything like that, but, you know, that's enough saying, hey, you can't do that.
Right, right. Well, you know, that referee referees a lot of NASL games, and I'm not a fan of that official. So, but I've seen him a lot here in Fort Lauderdale and Tampa Bay. But that having been said, no, it's a despicable thing. I don't know why Deuce is so animated that way, but that gave Klinsmann the excuse to flip the captaincy over to Bradley. And I think, you know, quite honestly, I think the situation now is that, you know, as much as some of us want to see this happen, I let me clarify my position. I know I've said a lot, and people feel like, well, you just want Klinsmann fired. I think Klinsmann can do one of these two jobs.
He can't do both.
He can't do both, and I'd like him to pick one. If he's not going to get fired, he needs to say, okay, I'm the technical director. We're going to go out. We're going to get Caleb Porter will be the guy he recommends. I'm not sure that's the right guy, but you know, we're going to go out. We're going to let Siggy coach this team for a couple of years into the World Cup. We're going to go out and we're going to get maybe even a coach from Europe. Or he's going to say, I'm the coach. We're going to go out and get a technical director, a high level one, Fabio Capello. I'm just naming random names. I'm not saying Capello will be the guy. But you know, we're going to go get a guy like Capello or Guidetti or some name from Europe to Carlos Quiroz, who, of course, did the job once before for the U.S. and coached the Metro Stars at one point and worked with Sir Alex and at Manchester United. You know, we're going to get a guy like that, and I'm going to step aside, and I'm just going to coach this team. That's what I want to see happen with this U.S. team. I think, though, you know, getting back to my point, the issue of how this team is going to play is built around the ability for Michael Bradley to get a lot of touches on the ball. And
right.
That's a little bit different than what we're used to. We're used to guys that are fast, you know, that are creative, dictating play. Clint and Landon, and before that, Claudio Reyna, obviously, playing around through him, and Todd Ramos before that. Michael Bradley's a very different kind of player than those four guys we're talking about historically. And we had some other really good players that play would run through at times, Ernie Stewart and Johnny O, whenever Johnny O was actually fit, which was rare. But he was fit during the 2002 World Cup, right? Michael's a different kind of player than those guys. But Jurgen made a decision pretty early on. I would say in 2013, he took over from Michael's dad in 2011. I would say maybe in 2012 that this was his best player, that he felt he was better than Landon and better than Dempsey. He was a little younger. You could question that decision, but he made that decision and has decided to build the team around Michael Bradley. So getting back to tonight's game, that's what I saw tonight again. The team is very much built around Bradley. And
yes, it is.
And this is the way Klinsmann wants it, right? He's going to live and die with the guy because he also knows, unlike Landon and unlike Dempsey, Michael Bradley always brings it for the national team. Whether he does for the club or not is another issue, but he never doesn't. And it's, again, being the son of a former national team coach and growing up around the U.S. program, he'll always bring it for the U.S. And Klinsmann knows that, so he's built a team around him.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely, Kardik. And that's the one thing. You know, you can argue, you know, about Jurgen Klinsmann's decisions for the national team. And then you have to argue about, as you were saying earlier, you know, well, being the technical director of the national team, you know, what you got to do here? I mean, you know, and as a coach, you're just trying to be, how you call it, you know, you're going to this team tick around Mike Bradley. Well, you know, it's got to be one or the other. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if he's going to be, you know, fitting this team around Michael Bradley, then that's it for Clint. And at the same time, he's got to make up his decision. Either you be the head coach of this team or you be the technical director of this team. You can't be both because you're going to get it. You're going to get double-barreled shotgun twice on both ends.
Right. Yeah, so let's review for a minute. He never wanted Klinsmann was very eager to kind of
turned the page on the U.S. soccer history book. So he never really wanted Landon Donovan back in this team after he took his sabbatical, and forced Donovan to sit behind Graham Zusi. It looks a little comical in retrospect, but Graham Zusi was in a good moment then, actually. But still, he forced him to sit behind Graham Zusi for a couple of games when he got back, if you remember.
Yeah.
And then after the Gold Cup, we played with a B team plus Landon
yep.
and DeMarcus, right? There was two A players on
yep.
that team. That was it.
Yep.
And then with Dempsey, I don't think he ever really wanted Dempsey back in this team. And he took the two friendlies in Europe against Holland and Germany. And if I have to mention those two great rivals, the Dutch and the Germans.
Yep.
Boy, scary stuff today in Hanover, and I understand Steve Tarundolo, our great American player, who's the legend in Hanover 96, I think was in the stadium that they evacuated today.
Yeah.
Scary stuff. It was a friendly. It's best to be cautious, although that was one of the games today I was looking forward to, was seeing Germany play Holland. Two games we had against those two teams, Clint wasn't in the team. This whole thing with the incident at the U.S. Open Cup game with Stoika, the official, had just taken place. And so Klinsmann, I think, used those two games to show to us. And you and I did one of the games on Ravel. We did post-game shows after both
yep.
those games.
Yep.
To show exactly how the U.S. team will look with Michael Bradley and without Clint Dempsey.
Yeah.
And Michael was, I think Michael knew it was about that, and he had two really good games. And
yep.
Then Dempsey was brought back into the team for the Gold Cup, and even though he was scoring goals, this sounds very silly because American soccer fans over the years have had this kind of thing, well, if you score a goal, you're good, and you can't be replaced. But Dave Van Home and I have for years said, and it's really been about Dempsey we've been talking about, going back to 2008, just because the guy scores a goal doesn't mean he has a good game. And
right.
Because Dempsey scored all these goals in the Gold Cup didn't mean he had a good tournament. And you heard a lot of complaints coming out of the Gold Cup about Michael Bradley's play and how poorly Michael Bradley played in the tournament as the captain. Klinsmann, since it seems like he's safe in this job and the results don't matter and Sunil Gulati's never going to fire him, he just used it as kind of a teaching moment. Look, this is what happens. I have Michael without Clint, without Deuce. We win in Germany. We win in the Netherlands. I have him with Clint. We get lucky to beat Haiti, and we lose to Jamaica. And we
yep.
lose to Panama. So I think he might have used it because he's a very stubborn guy and has to be proven right all the time.
Yep.
Klinsmann might have put Dempsey back in the team to show us we were all wrong. And not me, because I actually agreed with him about building the team around Bradley. But and then the Mexico game, Clint Dempsey was terrible. He was the worst player on the pitch for either team.
Yep.
And that kind of proved the point. So Klinsmann lost, but then he can turn around and say, yeah, look, I dropped the player that was bad. He's the only guy he dropped from that team, basically, was Dempsey. And now we go to Trinidad and get a result.
Yep.
We didn't win, but we got a result. This was a game, as I said the other night to you and have said over and over again, this is the game I expected the U.S. to lose. But they didn't lose tonight. They got a draw, and that's a positive result. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Because if you're going to go down there and lose, and I mean, play poorly and lose, I mean, forget it. I mean, you know, then everyone's already starting the witch hunt and everything, and they want Klinsmann gone. But you got to give Klinsmann credit. I thought the U.S., they would have gotten the goal from Zardes, then, you know, people would be screaming, Klinsmann's a genius! But, you know, that didn't happen. But still, I just think that Klinsmann had a solid game plan. And you know what? If you're going to get a goal out of, if you're going to get a goal out of Trinidad and Tobago the way they've been playing recently, you know, good luck to you. And I would have to say at the moment, you know, good luck to Klinsmann, and 4 points, and you're still top.
Well,
of the
Trinidad scored four goals. You know, this Mexico team that we just struggled against in L.A., granted, it was a little bit of a different Mexico team, not much of a different team, but a little bit different. Trinidad scored four goals against them in the Gold Cup. They won the group with Mexico in it. So it's a team that scores goals.
They just scored two goals in Guatemala. I'm not sure if we're going to score two goals when we go to Guatemala. We probably won't. We'll probably score one goal.
Probably.
Might be 1-0 we win or 1-1 draw, like last time there. So, and I remember when we won 1-0 there on Bocanegra's header a couple of years ago. I mean, it was that's probably like 8 years ago now. But, you know, it's a tough – you don't get – they scored two goals in Guatemala, which is tough to do. And they scored four goals against Mexico. So they're a good team and held them off the board. So the question now, Daniel, I'm kind of what's your take on this? The idea of playing Ream as a left back and Orozco as a right back, both are natural center backs, both play center backs for their club, but it worked today. They got away with it.
I think you can only get away with it for so long. I think in this game they had to, and I think it's fine. But to be honest with you, if you're going to take on a team like Mexico or you're going to take on any other teams that are probably going to be better at home, honestly, you're not going to get away with it. And I think Jurgen's going to have to understand that, you know, there's going to be times when you just cannot have – or look, if you want to have Tim Ream as your left back and you're going to have someone else as your right back, that's fine. But you can't have both Orozco and Ream be your fullbacks because that's playing with fire against a team – like a Mexico, maybe even like a Costa Rica. If you're going to do that with those two guys, forget it. It's just too dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's why Jurgen felt like he needed to play with DeMarcus Beasley in the Mexico game. The Mexico now looking very strong under Juan Carlos Osorio. Really, it kind of stunner of a result today in terms of CONCACAF in Honduras. I guess Honduras is really, really down this cycle.
Yep.
I don't know when the last time Mexico actually got a result there was before this in San Pedro Sula. I think it's been a very long time.
Yeah. Wow. Currently on BN Sports, ladies and gentlemen, we got Canada on the road in El Salvador, and Will Johnson on a long-distance shot, he just missed the net by a couple of inches. I mean, he just went over the crossbar on the long-distance rip. So at the moment,
Canada can find a way to win this game.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, they're really, really, really looking good to make the hex. And boy, I think the hex is going to be interesting because if Canada makes it, I think Trinidad's going to make it. It'll be Panama, Costa Rica, U.S., Mexico. It's going to be very competitive, and I think that it's possible that someone's going to miss the World Cup. I mean, I'm thinking it could be Costa Rica, but no, maybe it won't be. It's kind of shocking. We have to view it in the context of how bad Honduras has been since the World Cup. But Mexico has consistently gone down there and lost. Not gotten draws, they've lost. And Honduras has now, so the 2008 qualifiers, the sub-hex round, the same round, Honduras smashed Mexico down there. And if I recall correctly, got a point at Azteca. And then in the hex, they smashed Mexico, and Sven-Göran Eriksson was fired the next day. And then in the qualifier for 2014, they smashed Mexico in San Pedro Sula, went to Azteca and beat them. Remember, they won. Everybody else got draws. We got a draw there. Jamaica got a draw there. Costa Rica got a draw there. They, Honduras went to Mexico and won in 2013. So now, 2.5 years later, in late 2015, to see this result in San Pedro Sula is a shocker. And Honduras pulled their usual trick. They played the game in the middle of the afternoon, so it was hotter and more humid, and they could wear the Mexican team down, and it didn't work. So Mexico's in a good moment, and it's interesting because Juan Carlos Osorio, you and I both know him very well. You know him especially well.
Yep.
He's kind of a vagabond of a manager. I mean, he went from Central Connecticut State to the Metro Stars to Man City to Millionaires, Chicago Fire, the Red Bulls.
Yep.
you know, this plays, that plays out. And then, you know, Sao Paulo most recently, now he's a Mexico manager. And Mexico fires managers quickly. They have a quick trigger.
Yes.
And Osorio's history indicates he's the type of manager that will never stay anywhere very long. And so you're thinking he would be especially there would be a especially quick trigger on Osorio with Mexico. Now I'm thinking he might have the longest tenure of any Mexico manager in the last two decades. The way things have started for him. I mean, he might have actually found a home, and most unlikely guy. But he, I think it's a strong possibility he's going to get to manage him at least through the Hex now. And maybe into the World Cup. And that's the longest Osorio has stayed anywhere and the longest Mexico's kept a manager in ages.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, has he kept notes?
Oh, yeah. Those notebooks are... You know, at some point, there's going to be a soccer museum somewhere in the world, football museum, soccer museum, that's going to ask for Juan Carlos Osorio's notebooks.
Yep, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if FIFA, if there's like a new FIFA president and he recognizes Juan Carlos Osorio, we want your pencil and your pad for posterity. this guy has been, you know, pretty good managing wherever he's gone. Unfortunately, MLS is like a different animal. And, I mean, he's lived here, you know,
I mean, I think the issue with, well, yeah, and that's good for Mexico because they want a guy that's living in the U.S. and U.S. or and not in Mexico because they play a lot of games in the U.S. and Javier Aguirre is Mexican, but he was living in the U.S. also when he managed them the most recent time. So they like that too because then also the guys don't react to the Mexican press if they're living in the U.S. That's another thing. This match is brutal. And the other thing you learn is that the Mexican American crowd that go to Mexico games in the United States, very pro Mexico, very nationalistic, never turn on their team. You go down to Azteca and Mexico falls behind in the game. The guys, the fans are liable to be cheering Honduras or whoever, U.S., whoever they're playing. I mean, it's a very, very, very. I remember one game we played them down there. I can't remember what year it was. One of the times we got a result down there, and you know they were olaying every touch of ours at Azteca.
Yep.
You know, this is supposedly this huge rivalry, and like half the Mexican fans are rooting for us because probably they wanted the coach fired, whoever it was. So, So Osorio, though, I think. He would have been a candidate for the U.S. job, in my opinion. But the U.S. is not really wanting to go in that direction. And with the Red Bulls, let's keep in mind, it was the wrong time. It was the last season at Giant Stadium. It was a tough time to be there. And obviously, the Europeans came in, took over the club, and Hans Bacca did a fair job. And now we're seeing in Mike Pecky and Jesse Marsh guys that are connected to the club doing a better job, connected to the history of the club. Doing a better job, but Daniel, I thought maybe we were going to have a discussion about who will be the next U.S. coach tonight. But I guess with this draw, we can suspend that discussion. Although I've had people ask me about Jason Christ on Twitter. I've had people ask me about Peter Vermees on Twitter. I've had people ask me about Greg Berhalter on Twitter. And I guess the discussion is not going to be had tonight.
Well, no, we can actually have this discussion if you want to think about it. I mean, look, let's give Jurgen Klinsmann some credit here. I mean, he got a game plan out there. Obviously, if you're going to nick a goal, Bain, then they almost had it, and it went off the crossbar, and that's Jossi Zardes, obviously. But to be honest with you, if there is some stumbling going on in the Guatemala home and home, or even, you know, even the Hex, I mean, you know, we can still say if there's an issue that is out there, and it's still out there, yeah, let's go ahead and throw it out there. I mean, look, Jason Christ right now is available. I mean, who else right now do you think would be available to be a coach for the national team outside of Kreis?
There are a lot of guys. Vermees is certainly available if they wanted to go that direction. I don't think they'll go with Caleb Porter yet. He's a little young. He's still a little rough around the edges. If they're trying to make a break with Klinsmann, they're not going to go with Caleb Porter. But Caleb Porter is a Klinsmann guy in many ways.
Yeah.
Look, I still think Ziggy could be a stopgap to get you through the World Cup with no illusion that he's going to manage past that. And that would be a time for him to walk away from management in general. That could work. And I actually think
I actually think Ziggy could work as the coach with Klinsmann as the technical director. I actually think that might work. And if Ziggy were willing to do that, I think you don't have to fire Klinsmann. I mean, Klinsmann relieves himself of the head coaching duties and he moves upstairs as technical director and oversees that program and that process. And he and Tab Ramos and Andy Herzog can work on getting these youth teams back into some sort of decent place. Who else? I mean, I like Greg Berhalter. I don't think we need to go for him just yet. I'm not sure. We don't have any real Americans managing in Europe that would want to take this job or that they would offer the job to. Bob Bradley, they're not going to bring back. We know that.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty good job in France. If you can get them promoted, that's going to be fantastic. We have another former U.S. international who's not really connected to our national team program anymore, but played several times under Steve Sampson, Dave Wagner, mm-hmm. David Bosner, German-American, who just took over Huddersfield Town. And I don't think they would bring him into the national team, but that's a guy that he could be a possibility. I mean, he's coaching at a high level. And that's really about it. Oh, and Dom Kinnear. And so the question about Dom Kinnear, I think, ultimately is, did he kind of always benefit from having good teams and having Giro inheriting a team from Frankie Yallop when Frankie Yallop left and took the Canada job in San Jose, and then having a team then that got, I mean, I think other teams' mistakes they were able to take advantage of. They were able to get Brian Mullen in from when the Galaxy released him. They were able to get Brad Davis, he'd been with the team. Stu Holden was from the area, so when he came back to MLS, he was assigned to Houston, allocated to Houston. Jeff Cameron was a good signing, but Houston kept getting guys right that were very good. And
yeah.
The question is, Dom Kinnear appears to be a very good American coach, but was it just that the earthquake / dynamo kept having really good players? Because that's kind of a way to look at it. When you look back at that era of MLS, when I think the league was pretty down compared to where it was the first 5-6 years of its existence and where it is now, that period from 2005 to 2009, where I think the quality of the league was down, was at a low ebb. He got Holden in that period. He got Mullen in that period, who was an underrated player for them. He got Brian Ching was a very good player, another guy the Galaxy had released and ended up with San Jose. The player Landon Donovan liked a lot. They had Dero, who, in my opinion, is one of the best players in the history of this league, if not the best player, over a long period of time. People say Landon. I tend to say Dero, although they're 1 and 2, obviously. I would also throw Jaime Moreno into that conversation. I mean, those are two top three guys. And then, outside shot for Stevie Ralston and baby Jason Christ, although Jason Christ was never on really good teams. But the question is Dom, you know, and then you got Jeff Cameron. It was another just phenomenal player. And that's why he's the guy that's the one American who can consistently play in England. That's the question about Dom. Whereas I think with Berhalter, we've seen him kind of mold his own team. Who else did I mention? Peter Vermees. We saw a team that I think Kurt Anolfo wasn't doing a terrible job with, but then Vermees really kind of stuck his stamp on the team in the style they played. And we're concerned a little bit with style. So I don't know what the relationship is between Klinsmann and any of these guys, but I think a solution still could be to let Klinsmann do the technical director's job and give one of these guys the head coaching job. The other option is to let Klinsmann coach, right? And then we have to go out and get a technical director. And who do we get? I don't know. I mean, maybe we see if Carlos Queiroz wants to do the job again. I think he's done in Iran, right? He's no longer coaching them?
I don't think so. I think he's done. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might be an option. I've heard Capello's name mentioned. That would cost a lot of money. So.
Oh yeah. There's no way they're going to bring him over. There's no way they're bringing him over.
Yeah. Right, so someone like that, right? I mean, I think Kiros might be a good one, or someone who will fit in Jurgen's kind of line of thinking. So that's got to be where they're looking. That's got to be what they're thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Kardik, thanks a lot again. I'll talk to you next time. And definitely, hope you enjoyed the Rabblecast I did, because I had a lot of positive comments. So I'll talk to you next time. Thanks again.
Great. Thank you, Daniel.
No problem. That's Kardik Krishnar from World Soccer Talk talking about this World Cup qualifier. Thank you very much for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll talk to you on Monday, because here we go. The MLS Cup playoffs are back. The conference finals, we're going to review them. Take care. Bye-bye for now.